This is the enzyme experiment, of course, and what we're really trying to do today is assess how well an enzyme is working. And enzymes, of course, are catalysts, right? So saying how well does an enzyme work is really the same thing as saying how fast is a reaction occurring, because that's what an enzyme does. It speeds up a reaction. The better an enzyme is working, the faster the reaction will occur, right? Well, that requires measuring either reactants or products, how much is there. And so this requires a technique that we haven't done before that I need to explain, and that is called spectrophotometry. You can tell from the spectrophotometry, the metri ending tells you that it's a measurement technique, and it uses light, that's why photo is in there. But spectrophotometry is a widely used technique for determining the concentration of some solute that you're interested in. You have to know what kind of solute you're looking for this to work, which you don't always. But that, if you're going to use spectrophotometry, you have to set up the machine, which, by the way, is called a spectrophotometer. You have to set it up correctly for the particular solute of interest. But no matter what solute you're looking for, if you're using spectrophotometry, it is an indirect measurement of concentration. For instance, if you use molar as your concentration units, which we have been in this course, directly measuring that based on the definition, which is moles of solute per liter of solution, right? You'd have to get in there and count moles. Well, you don't live long enough to count a mole, even if you could get in there and count them. That's a huge number. But that's what it would involve, actually counting individual particles of solute. You're not doing that, obviously. That would be a direct way. We're using an indirect method, and it's based on the absorbance of photons, like I was talking about earlier upstairs. Remember I said that pigments absorb photons, and that's why they look colors to us? Not everything absorbs photons, though. There are, as I said upstairs, three possibilities when a photon encounters an object. It can be transmitted, just go right through it. It can be absorbed, or it can be reflected off in another direction. But remember from upstairs that if a photon does get absorbed, then it is no longer there. The photon is destroyed in that process. Spectrophotometry relies on this. Now, another important thing, other than it's indirect, is that the measurement that a spectrophotometer will give you is never absolute. An absolute measurement is something that stands on its own. A spectrophotometer's measurement is always comparative, meaning that the number that it gives you is in relation to some other thing that it's comparing it to. And that thing that it's comparing it to is a special tube that you make, or special contents of a tube that you make, and that's called the blank. It's called the blank because it is just like all of your other samples. It has all of the ingredients, except it doesn't have any of the solute of interest, the thing you're looking for. All right? And that's why, depending on which experiment you'll do, you'll make up a blank differently. The blank in the two experiments is different. But it has everything in it that all your other tubes are going to have, except none of the solute of interest. And that's what you use to set up or calibrate the spectrophotometer. Now, go ahead and open your plastic box and take your spectrophotometer out. And if you were old enough, you'd realize that this is a pretty small device. They decades ago, they used to be big benchtop devices, about this big. Now it's just a tiny thing, or at least this model is. If you look under the hood of this device, though, they're pretty simple. On one end, you have a lamp. A lamp that is emitting white light. And so that means light of all visible wavelengths combined, right? All the colors make white combined. At the other end, opposite of the lamp, you have a well, and in yours it's a square hole. You make sure you don't get any liquid in directly in that hole. That square hole accepts the special tubes that you use for the device. Make sure when you put your tubes in that they're dry on the outside. But the special tubes are not just called tubes, they're called cuvettes. And your used cuvettes, when you clean up today, go in that box labeled for used cuvettes. Don't put them along with your other plastic waste. Okay. But anyway, you have this lamp shining white light, all colors. And you, inside the device, there is a prism after the lamp. And when light hits a prism, light gets refracted or bent. But how much it gets bent depends on the wavelength, which in our eyes corresponds to color. That's why when you have white light coming into a prism, it's going to refract a bunch of different colors all going at their own angles, just like the dark side of the moon cover. Okay? White light comes in, individual colors come out at different angles. And when you set up the device for your particular solute, what you're really doing is, at least in the old models, is twisting this prism so that just the right color of light is the one that's going straight forward. All the other ones are just going to go off to the side and not be used. The reason that's important is because depending on what the solute is, any given solute, if it absorbs photons at all, will absorb them at a particular color or wavelength better than any other. And you want to use the best possible light for it. Okay? That's one thing. Now, let's say we have our blank in here. Remember that the blank doesn't have any solute. The reason we call it a blank is that we're going to zero the machine with it. We're going to zero the spectrophotometer with the blank. We're basically telling the machine no absorbance is taking place here because you know it doesn't have any of the solute. But what the machine is really doing when it puts an output is that it has a sensor on the far end after the well that will respond to light hitting it. Some amount of this light is going to make it all the way through the sample that's in your tube, your cuvette, and go and hit this screen. All right? Well, even though there's no solute of interest in your blank, some of those photons are not going to make it all the way through, right? Some of them are going to be bounced off or maybe even absorbed by the tube itself. But however much light gets through, you're basically, when you're zeroing, you're telling the machine all of the light got through and therefore none got absorbed. That's what zeroing is. And that's the comparison that all your other samples are going to be compared to. Because once it's zeroed, and you have to zero your machine only one time, then when you take that blank out and put one of your samples in from the experiment, it will have some amount of solute in it. You don't know how much, that's the reason you're putting in a spectrophotometer. But it'll have some solute particles, and therefore those solute particles will absorb some of those photons. And therefore not as much light will get transmitted. More of the light will be absorbed. What the number that is put out by the machine is, is called an absorbance value. It actually doesn't have any units, but it's absorbance. Okay? The greater that number is, the greater the concentration of solute particles is in the tube that you're reading. This is why it's an indirect measurement. You're basically calculating concentration based on how much light gets absorbed by those particles. But this is why it's a comparative measurement. Unless you put the blank in for a comparison, the numbers are meaningless. They only mean something in relation to what you say is zero. All that good? Now, setting up your spectrophotometer, you require a computer, and it has to be one of ours because it has to have the software on it. So I will open those up once I'm done talking. You don't need one per person, but you need one per group. And the instructions for how to set up and use the machine are on the laminated page within this. Follow those to the letter, because if you do it in the wrong order, it won't work right. Okay, that's how you use a spectrophotometer. I mean, that's what a spectrophotometer is in general. Now, what we're specifically doing with it today is measuring the solute of interest for our experiment. But the experiment in the manual has this made-up backstory. This whole thing about BIMCO Labs or whatever it is, that's just fantasy. It is just to hopefully grab your interest, but none of it is real at all. I'm going to just tell you what actually is happening instead of the story. The enzyme that we're actually studying today is called lactase. You can tell that's an enzyme, right? A-S-E ending. This is one of those enzymes who get their name based on the substrate, not based on what it does. Because the normal substrate for the enzyme lactase is the lactose molecule. And what is lactose? What does that name tell you it is? What does O-S-E tell you? It's a carbohydrate, right? Like glucose, same ending, cellulose. Well, there's different sizes of carbohydrates, right? Lactose is a disaccharide, meaning it's made up of two monosaccharides that are hooked together. So it's not a huge polysaccharide, but it's not a monosaccharide. It's two hooked together. What does lact mean? Any idea? What is it? Milk. Yes, lactation is milk production. Lact means milk. So lactose means milk sugar, because milk has lactose in it. That's why people who don't have this enzyme, which is a lot of people, are lactose intolerant. Can't have dairy products. But anyway, this is the enzyme of interest, lactase. And it's a hydrolytic enzyme, which means it operates for a hydrolysis reaction, which you know is breaking a bigger thing into smaller chunks. Well, lactose, the normal substrate, is a disaccharide. If you break it apart into its two monosaccharides, you get the monosaccharides it's made out of, which are glucose for one of them and galactose for the other. When they're still hooked, it's lactose. But when the enzyme works well, it will split lactose into glucose and galactose. And you're trying to figure out under which conditions in your experiment does this lactase enzyme do its best job. Now, when you think about it, there's two fundamentally different ways you could figure this out using a spectrophotometer. Because the spectrophotometer allows you to measure how much of something there is there. But if the enzyme is doing its job, it's turning lactose into both of these products. Therefore, you could assess how well the enzyme's working by measuring how much lactose is disappearing, the disappearance of the reactant, the substrate, right? Because the reaction is not occurring unless lactose level is going down. That's one way you could do it. Or you could choose to measure instead how much product appears, because it's conversely, the reaction is not occurring unless product gets produced out of the reactant. Either one of these would be fine to do, but there's a problem. And it goes back to not all things absorbing photons. Lactose does not absorb photons in the range of the machine. The spectrophotometer's photons go right through lactose, so it's undetectable. Therefore, we can't choose to measure the disappearance of the reactant or the substrate. Well, glucose and galactose, the products, are also both invisible, which would mean normally we wouldn't be able to use a spectrophotometer to do this at all. We'd have to figure out some other way to get the concentration. But there is another way we can still use the spectrophotometer, and that's why this story was invented. That's if we use, instead of lactose, the normal substrate for the enzyme, we give it a different substrate, a surrogate or replacement substrate, and that is what's called ONPG, that you've already been working with. Now, ONPG is an abbreviation, and that's what most people would call it. You don't have to know what it stands for, but if you're curious, it is ortho-nitrophenyl beta-dextrogalactopyranoside, and that's why we call it ONPG. It's much easier to say. But it is very similar to lactose. Enzymes are specific for a substrate, but not uniquely necessarily, meaning that some enzymes will work with multiple different substrates, but they have to be similar enough to each other that they'll fit in to the active site. Okay? ONPG is very similar to lactose, and so similar that it will also fit into the same active site on lactase, the enzyme. And also similar to lactose is the fact that ONPG is really two things stuck together, and they can be broken apart just like lactose can. If you break ONPG apart, which you will with the help of the lactase enzyme, just like the enzyme will break lactose apart, it will also break ONPG apart. And the two pieces that make up ONPG are galactose, same thing as in lactose, but the other one is O-nitrophenol. Okay? Now, ONPG, just like lactose, is invisible to the spectrophotometer. So once again, even using this other substrate, we can't measure the disappearance of the substrate. It's invisible. Galactose, I already told you, is invisible, so that's no good either. But O-nitrophenol is detectable by the spectrophotometer. And that's why we're using this other kind of substrate. Because it's a pigment, it looks a color to our eyes. If O-nitrophenol is in solution, it will make the solution to our eyes look yellow. And different concentrations are detectable by our eyes as less yellow or more yellow, right? We can tell the difference between yellowishness to a certain degree, but that's just a qualitative assessment. We can say less yellow, more yellow. We know the less yellow one has a lower concentration of O-nitrophenol than the more yellow one, but we can't put any numbers to it with just using our eyes. That's why we use a spectrophotometer. It gives us a quantitative measurement, one with numbers. And also, a spectrophotometer can tell the difference between yellowishness that would look the same to your eyes. So that's what we're doing. We're using ONPG as the surrogate substrate and we're detecting O-nitrophenol if any does get produced. The more O-nitrophenol that gets produced, the higher the absorbance will be, and the yellower it will look to us. And that means whatever condition that was is better for the enzyme. It works better under those conditions. Remember the graphs I showed you of temperature and pH, for instance? They had a peak somewhere. That was the optimum condition for that enzyme. That's what you care about in your experiment, whether you're doing the lactose one or the temperature one. That all clear? Okay, then when you set up your spectrophotometer, you'll see eventually that there's a screen with a collect button. Now, you're not actually saving anything on the computer, so don't be afraid to tell it to erase and start over. But when you see the screen that has the collect button at the top, hit collect and just keep it collecting, even though you're changing tubes and everything. You don't care about whether it's going up or down when you're changing tubes, because you're not saving any of that. All you care about is writing down numbers after a few seconds of stabilization while the tube is in there. I'll walk around and make sure everyone's doing it right, but just make sure you're collecting. Otherwise, the numbers, you're not receiving any numbers. But there's only one number, or there'll be a list of a lot of numbers. There's only one that you care about, and that's the one that corresponds to the correct color or wavelength of light. And I'll make sure everyone's doing that correctly as well. But get your, I have to unlock these probably. Once I unlock them, get your computer up and set up. Someone should specialize in setting up the spectrophotometer, process your tubes appropriately according to the instruction. Zeroing it actually takes longer than getting the other readings. Once you have it zeroed, you can get your numbers quickly just by putting them in. But that's not the only, you'll be done with that pretty soon. That's not the only thing you have to do, though. That's the only thing you have to get as raw data here. You make some calculations, and of course you're writing your report at home later on. And don't even really think about this report, first of all, until you've written your second report, which I intentionally didn't make due yet because I want you to focus on the upcoming test before you even do that. So make sure you have your good data, but worry about writing this later. Still, though, after you have your raw data, the one thing you need to do as groups of two are make whiteboards. Just like last time I told you that you would get bonus points for including the picture of your whiteboard, same thing here. But the whiteboard needs to include two things. It's in the instructions, but you need to make a graph on half of the whiteboard and a little cartoon on half of the whiteboard. Call me around to make sure that's okay before you... Let me approve your whiteboard, basically, before you take a picture of it. But that'll get you some bonus points, which are always good to have. All right, I'll unlock the computers.